Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. I am Mark Levine on the line with
Terry D. Kester.
And Garland Nixon should be joining us in just a few moments. And we've got a lot to talk about this evening, this afternoon, whenever you're listening to this broadcast, because it's rebroadcast the evening sometimes. We're glad that you are here, whether at We Act Radio on Progressive Voices, listening at Sunday at noon or any other time. We're glad to have you. So we're going to talk about a tiny little chemical spill in West Virginia that happened to leave the entire state capital and 300,000 residents without drinking water or water to bathe in. And the fact that it hadn't been regulated for 22 years. But before we get to that, I understand, Terry, that you have given up on Obama. You're done with him. You're wiping him off. You're like, he's done. He's out. He's not going to be invited to your parties anymore.
No, he's not. He actually will be. He actually be invited to my personal parties. Yes, and you know they're big. They're big, and I hope you come too. I mean, we have
absolutely
every week. Yeah, it's a BYO everything. No. Anyway, it's not the man that I've given up on as much as the situation and the fact that he has not been able to or will not be able to stand up to the various situations. At the very best, he's, in my opinion, going to be like an Eisenhower who tells us how cruddy things are after he's out of office, which does a whole hell of a lot of good. I'll give you a couple of quick examples that have just totally discouraged me. And one of these you may or may not have heard of, because, again, it doesn't get much press. And what really goes on in our government doesn't get much press.
That's true. Because we do what we do.
Yeah, you're darn right. We try to, anyway. Are you aware of the drugs protection status that's in jeopardy?
The drugs protection status in jeopardy. No, I am not. I have no idea what you're talking about.
This is typical of what goes on in our government, which you got to remember to all is that our government is controlled by corporations. It is not controlled by the president. It is not controlled by Congress. It is controlled by corporations. Back in 2006, briefly, when the prescription, with Bush, with the Medicare prescription benefit law was put in place, they put in, Democrats probably got in, a private insurance plans that deliver protection benefits to seniors and disabled beneficiaries must cover all of substantiality, all medications in the particular class. That includes antidepressants, antipsychotic drugs, and immunosuppressant drugs. Key drugs for people, for mentally ill people, for people who suffer from depression, and of course for seniors and anybody that has a health care problem where the immune system is challenged. That was part of the 2006 law, that all insurance companies must cover these medications, no matter what the medication is.
So you're
is,
telling
no
me
where it comes from.
And by the way, Garland has finally joined us.
Hello, Garland.
So welcome, Garland.
Well, fact is, gentlemen.
Hello there. So what Terry's telling us, since you arrived late, is that there are all these drugs that were protected actually under George Bush in 2006 that I think you're going to tell me are no longer protected?
They are going to remove that protection.
And that's mostly mental health drugs?
Yes, mental health drugs and anti-immune suppressant drugs. You know, like if you get cancer, which we all will, you know, and you get on, any of the heavy medications that you get for cancer, your immune suppressed system gets pretty well beat up.
Right.
And you need these drugs.
Well, and these drugs were provided under, the Medicare prescription drug bill?
They were required. It's required that every insurance company in the country must cover these particular drugs.
So who's removing them?
Our administration.
Well, under what law?
It's the organization is, what is it actually? It's the Federal Register Administration is proposing it and is calling for it.
Awfully technical, but this isn't part of the Affordable Care Act.
Medicaid services.
This isn't the Affordable Care Act.
No, and I know a little bit about
it. Oh, okay, tell us, Tom.
A little bit about it. What Terry's talking about is Medicare Part D. That was a prescription drug plan that was for seniors.
Right.
That was That came up under the George Bush administration with a lot of really weird things going on. But there was a formulary which said these are the basic drugs that have to be covered, and then, you know, you can decide what after that. And it sounds as though Terry's saying there's a change in the formulary, and now these companies are, or now they're saying these, you don't have to cover some drugs. But now, you keep in mind, that doesn't mean that insurance companies won't cover them. If this happens, as I understand, it's only a proposal, right, Terry?
It's happening. It's happening. And it does mean what the insurance companies can do is they can cover the drugs that they want to cover, which therefore will be the drugs that they can make the most profit on, obviously. That means
so a mental health drug, for example, that is very cheap to produce and effective, but doesn't make a lot of profit for the insurance companies.
Exactly,
they can scratch off the list.
Exactly.
See, but sometimes, what happens is this: over the course of the years, insurance companies are constantly coming up with new types of drugs. And I know in the past, because I actually had my health insurance license in Maryland, D.C., and Virginia, and I actually taught people about Medicare Part D. One of the things that happens too, keep in mind, and I don't know for sure that this is the case, insurance companies come up with new drugs. And as a result, they'll say, hey, look, government, this drug will now, you can use this, and it's better, and it has less side effects, and blah, blah, blah. Can you remove these from the formulary because we've got new drugs? So we don't know for sure. There could very well be, if you check drug by drug, new drugs that they've introduced, and they've made the case these are obsolete drugs.
Okay, but here's the thing. The Food and Drug Administration, at least as far as I'm concerned, is a relatively trustworthy government branch, you know, executive agency. And it seems to me that if the scientists at the FDA say, hey, these drugs are more effective than those drugs, I'm willing to go with it. I don't, you know, it's hard to know who to trust, but if you're talking about people in the Medicaid branch who are a bunch of accountants who aren't scientists and don't know much about the drugs, then I'm fully on board with you, Terry, because clearly that's just...
Let me put it this way. The National Kidney Foundation is adamantly against this and is saying this is ridiculous.
Okay.
The National Alliance on Mental Illness is saying, are you kidding me? This is crazy.
All right. Well, those are
literally
some
crazy.
Reputable sources,
because
no question.
The problem is that anybody who knows it has suffered with any kind of depression or anything else, there are a variety of drugs out there. It takes a long time with a lot of study to find the right combination of drugs for any individual. There are no one drug that serves the diseases, mental diseases, or autoimmune suppressant. In the whole industry, it's usually a combination of drugs. You have to try different ones. They have to all be available because they all do slightly different things, and that's what's going to be.
So, Terry, this is the last straw for you. You've given up on Obama, but because of these drugs, and I guess the NSA.
Because of that, and because it's something that's done basically under the table, and nobody pays much attention to it. You add to that, frankly, and if you've seen the New York Times, and I'm sure you've had. About the NSA, the restraints that Obama is supposedly putting on it are absurd. They don't accomplish much of anything. What is needed more than anything else that good old Senator Wyden has been proposing forever is that you have an independent overseer that can look at the whole situation. If you look at the New York Times article on how they have now put, or have been doing for years, tracking devices into the USBs that go into computers so that they can even put malware in your computer.
That they're doing that on Americans. At least we don't know it as of yet. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying, as far as we know, that particular aspect of spying so far, unlike the spying on our emails and spying on our telephones, that part supposedly is just used for foreigners, at least as far as we know. I want to give Garland a chance to respond.
Yeah, let me throw something in there. I happen to know not only do they do it, the FBI does it. Yes, there are applications that can be loaded onto your phone, onto your computer, et cetera. And here's the reality. As well, there should be.
If you have a warrant.
Where you need to use it.
If you have a warrant, I'm fine with it.
Yeah, I'm not going to categorically say if you got, you know, some heroin dealer who's moving massive heroin up and down, and the FBI says, okay, we need to, you know, we get a warrant.
Get a warrant.
Phone, we can do everything, and we'll use this application to turn his phone into basically a recording device for us. I don't have a problem with that.
It's all about the warrant.
The issue is, how is it used? Is it just randomly used for anyone and everyone?
No, the issue is there any oversight?
And that's what a warrant does. A warrant gives an independent court oversight.
No, that's not
what a warrant
does. Sure. Oversight is when you check and see what has been done.
Well, that too. What I'm saying is that if you were to require, as the Constitution, I would argue, does without any additional legislation, a warrant before you spy on American people.
And who gives the warrant?
A court.
Which court?
And that's the oversight.
It depends on the court. Some courts are good, some courts are bad, but if it happens.
We're talking about spying here. Who gives the oversight for that?
Currently? No. Yeah. Currently, it's the Foreign Surveillance Intelligence Court, which
right.
is a secret court. I don't consider that a warrant under the Fourth Amendment because it's a secret court.
We know that they simply rubber stamp.
Yes,
we know
that's true.
That it's like about 93% of
that's
everything
true.
That's ever been.
No, yeah, when I say a warrant, I mean a real warrant with a real court, with real oversight. Not, you know, one thing about the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court, a lot of people don't realize, is that every single judge on that court is appointed by one man, Chief Justice Roberts of the Supreme Court.
Right.
It's not even a fair reflection of the liberals and conservatives on the court, you know, 5-4 or whatever. It is 100% Chief Justice Roberts people. To me, that's not what the courts are about. The courts that issue warrants all across the nation for criminal warrants and so forth. Some are Democrats, some are Republicans, some are liberals, some are conservative. That's much more a reflection of who we are as Americans.
And it's very obvious, and it's been throughout our history. You can check this. I mean, it's constant, and now it's much more extreme. A little bit of checking, a little bit of, oh, we have to approve it ahead of time, does not stop any industry or government organization from just going overboard. You don't even have time to not go overboard. You put the darn spying apparatus anywhere you can, anytime you can, so that you can get what you think might be important, and there's no way after the fact that somebody is looking at it and saying, well, this isn't a good idea, guys, or you're out of control, or you've gone too far. If it weren't for Mr. Snowden, we wouldn't even know what's been going on for the last umpteen years.
And the dirty little secret.
Something about our government?
The dirty little secret about the NSA is that there has never been a single documented case where any of these things that go way beyond has prevented a single act of terrorism.
And there's even not yet access to everything that has happened.
Let me give Garland a chance. Go ahead, Garland.
And if there is an incident of it, they can't share it. So there's never going to be a documented incident, because if there are incidents, they're not going to very well document and share them with the public. But let me throw this in there. Terry says he's part of the reason he's given up on Obama because of this. Whenever somebody says, you know, I'm angry at this person because of that, here's the first question that comes to mind. So then if Obama goes, then the problem's over? See, if it was Obama, then all you got to do is get Obama out of office and the problem's over. And it never happened before Obama.
It did happen before Obama. Bush started this.
Hold on, Terry. Let Garland make his point.
Then you can respond. Go ahead, Garland.
Yeah, they are doing what they've always done, and they're going to continue. The only thing that's happening now is there's newer technology that allows them to do it more. If anyone thinks that Obama or any other president is going to get in there and stop it or change it, they're fooling themselves. So when people say, I'm mad at Obama because of
You're missing my point.
This is when I was with the ACLU, here's the point we always made is the more the more intrusion ability you give to the government, the more they're going to take. It's not about Obama.
Okay. All right. Terry wants to respond. Go ahead, Terry.
You missed the opening part of the show.
True.
I said, and I say it now, it is not about the man Obama, except in the situation that he has not stood up to the problem. He has done nothing more and probably will do nothing more than what Eisenhower did, is tell us how bad it was afterwards. He has not taken the bull by the horns. He has not been the leader that's needed, and I think it's damn near impossible. I'm not even blaming him. I'm just saying the government is so out of whack and so out of control and controlled only by private industry that all of us are being screwed, and I agree, one man can't stop it. That's the real problem, but Obama hasn't tried or hasn't done it in a way that has really been effective to the American people. The final thing that a point that I want to make, and I can list point after point after point, including the new budget bill that's just been passed, is Vietnam. Vietnam. See, the nightmare.
I think that one's over, Terry. I think that one's resolved, good or for
that
ill.
That worked out real well, too. You know, the nightmare continues, guys. I'm talking about Afghanistan.
Yeah.
I just heard, maybe you guys did too, the inspector general, one of the inspector generals of the
for the government in dealing with the opium situation in Afghanistan. And the opium now is production is something like 30% higher than it's ever been. It's totally out of control. It's what funds all of the Taliban and terrorist organizations. And the Inspector General pointed out for the last 12 years, there has been no consistent program to deal with the opium problem.
But now, this is fascinating to me, Terry.
Every other month or every year.
Because usually I'm the guy.
And we are walking out of a situation that's going to be an absolute disaster that's going to make Iraq look like a playground.
This is fascinating to me, Terry, because usually I'm the guy that advocates using the military and other things more than either of you, and particularly you, Terry. I mean, I, as you know, supported a no-fly zone to stop the massacres in Syria. Two of you disagree with me on that. How, apart from the military, and to me this is a much lesser problem than the massacres in Syria personally, but how are we going to stop opium in Afghanistan any more than cocaine in Colombia? I'm sure we can give them some, you know, weed eradicating stuff that they can dust from crop dusters. But barring a real, I want to get out of Afghanistan. I don't think we're doing any good there, and I'm fine with bombing a few Taliban or Al Qaeda people when we find them. But how do you plan? I mean, to get rid of opium in Afghanistan, to me, that's too much intervention in international affairs.
Well, it's not too much intervention in international affairs because, I mean, it's been an international operation, and it's been an international operation with the cooperation, for the most
right.
part, of the Afghan government.
Well, not so much anymore, but what's your plan for opium?
The point is, I don't have the answer to that. I'm just simply pointing out there has been no plan.
Well, I don't think we could solve that problem.
Every time they've put in a plan, within a month or less, or a year maximum, they have changed the plan.
We can't
so
stop
nobody in Afghanistan.
Drugs in America, much less in Afghanistan.
I'm sorry?
We can't stop drugs in America, much less in Afghanistan.
Go ahead,
the point is there's nobody in Afghanistan that can trust what we're doing because we keep on changing the policy.
Now, they can't trust us, and we can't trust them. I mean, Karzai, I don't trust him a bit.
Yeah.
Well,
we haven't been productive about it. We haven't been consistent.
Okay. Give Garland a chance. Go ahead.
It's funny that Robert Gates' book came out and the Republicans have been saying, oh, this just condemns Obama. Well, basically what Gates said is Obama wanted to get the heck out of Iraq and Afghanistan.
Which shouldn't be a surprise to anybody.
Was, how can we get out of here? That he didn't trust Karzai, that he pretty much feels like you and I do from day one. But let me comment on the heroin.
Opium
issue, because you know I kind of used to teach organized crime, and part of that was Colombia. Here's an issue you have in Colombia and the many other places in Afghanistan. You have rural areas where the farmers can't do anything to make any money, and they find a crop that they can get make money on. And that the reality is, if you would go spray all the crops and kill all the opium or the coca leaves or whatever the case may be, depending upon the geographic location, the people there would starve and they would go berserk and there'd be a civil war. So what you really have to do in order to address these issues is to find a way to replace the economic infrastructure change the economic infrastructure for all of the farmers, because they don't have another way to make a living, and so they're going to continue to do this.
Exactly.
It's
right.
It's a terrible reality, but that's what it is.
Exactly. And we actually had that kind of a program, and I believe the province is Helmut, if I'm pronouncing that correctly.
Yeah, it is Helmut.
And they had that program, and it was working, and then we abandoned the program after about a year. We just walked away from it.
Well, abandoned the program. When you're talking about the program, you're talking about intensive American troops going into villages, teaching farmers different trades. You're talking about enormous expense, and frankly, I don't know that Afghanistan's worth it.
I don't know if Afghanistan is worth it or not. I certainly didn't agree with going necessarily into Iraq, but the point is we went into Iraq, we created the chaos, and we walk out.
Well, do you agree with Colin Powell? Colin Powell said, you break it, you bought it. He said that of Bush about Iraq.
Exactly.
So does that mean that we can't leave Iraq or Afghanistan ever?
And I think, again, look at Vietnam.
Well,
we left Vietnam, and Vietnam went on to do whatever Vietnam was going to do, and the sun still rose and shined on Vietnam after we left.
Except you know, there's a big difference.
What's his name? Al Sharpton said something that was brilliant way back when they said, you know, how do we get out of Iraq with our dignity? And he said, we lost our dignity when we went in. So that's not going to happen. Get out. And I think it's the same thing. You know, we went in there. Yes, these things were going in. So we go in and we meddle in their lives and we do all this other stuff, and these things don't stop because the dynamics aren't changing. We're still there doing some things, and when we leave, they're going to go on about their business. I'm with Mark. I think you get out and leave the people to go on about their business. You're not mean not like
unless
I think it's up to us to go into every country that produces drugs of one kind or another and spend $100 billion in trying to, you know, teach them to, you know, to grow hemp or something. I don't know.
But I give two exceptions. One, when they attack us, because I still think that if they're forming Al-Qaeda cells that are attacking the United States, I have no problem with droning as long as we get the bad guys and we don't get innocent people too, which is one of my real concerns. But I have no problem with going at, you know, but pinpoint to the extent you can do that, going after the bad guys, and when they're killing in mass murder, that's my other exception. I've always felt war is only allowed for two reasons: one, self-defense, and the other, mass murder. And I argue that genocide is also a reason, which is why I advocate doing something in Syria, but not in Afghanistan. I think we've done all we could, frankly, for Afghanistan 10 years ago, and I wish we'd left back in 2004.
It's interesting you make the point about Vietnam, because Vietnam was not in any way, shape, or form even a tiny, tiny, tiny threat to the United States
That's
of America.
True.
It had nothing to do with the United States of America.
That's true.
That is not true of the Taliban. That is not true of Al-Qaeda.
I agree. But I don't. But they're more in Pakistan than Afghanistan right now, and we're not going to invade Pakistan. My point is not that we stop fighting Al-Qaeda. My point is that we fight them smarter. We fight them not with troops on the ground, but with basically air, and also some way to reach out to the populace to encourage them, you know, not to support Al-Qaeda. But if they do, as long as they're not harming us or killing massive numbers of people, there's nothing we can or should do about it.
Okay, but at the very least, then, what we're saying is that once again, our government has failed.
Sure, they failed.
And what we're also saying...
But that was Bush who brought us in there.
Yep.
I mean, you could argue that Obama didn't. I don't know what you're arguing. Obama should stay in longer or should have gotten us out quicker. I mean, he was dealt this mess. He walked in with this. What should he have done, Terry? Are you saying we should do more in Afghanistan or do less?
What I'm really pointing out here is, again, I'm not putting all of the blame on Obama. That is not the issue. It's just that Obama hasn't been able to, whether it's personal or whether it's systematic, Obama has not been able to correct the major problems that are destroying this country, whether it's military action, whether it's not financing the social programs we need, whether it's protecting seniors and depressed people and people on chemotherapy from keeping them to get the medication they need. He has not been able to do it. Can he do it? Is it possible for any person to do it? I don't think so.
Well, you know, I'll tell you.
That's the big issue, guys.
If you're arguing about his effectiveness,
yes.
I will grant you that, and he was imperfect too, but I actually do think, all things being equal, Bill Clinton was more effective with the Republican Congress than Obama has been with the Republican Congress.
Yes.
Now, it may well be that the Republican Congress under Obama is more rabid than even the Republican Congress under Newt Gingrich and Bill Clinton, although they did try to impeach him, so they were pretty rabid too. But I do think Clinton did something that Obama doesn't do as well. Clinton went over the heads of Congress, connected with the American people, and got the American people to lobby Congress much better than Obama has. And I'll grant you that.
Well, you cannot ignore the different dynamic here. You know, you can't ask a guy to, you know, to build a house out of, you know, a bunch of old dried leaves. You've got to have some timber and some cement and things like that. This guy has a Congress who says, no matter what, he's got people in Congress that says, we will destroy this economy.
That's true.
Just to stop him from doing anything. In my lifetime, since I've been paying attention to politics, I have never seen the likes of this Congress right now.
Newt Gingrich came close. Now, Newt Gingrich shut the government down. They did some pretty nasty stuff during Clinton's time, too.
No, but I just don't compare it, because there were some things that Bill Clinton was able to work with the Congress and get through. You've got people now who say, we don't care if it's good for America. If it comes from him, then it's not good for America. They have taken a position. I mean, those Tea Party guys are radicals. We have not had the radical element has always been there. But they haven't had any kind of a foothold in the House or in the Senate like they have before now. And so I say Barack Obama does want to do stimulus. First of all, he wants to do more stimulus. He wants to do jobs programs. He wants to do all of the things that he wants to do are things, a lot of things that we would like. And he would if he could. So I give him a pass on a lot of on the legislative end. People that are just determined to say, no, I don't care. He wants it, well, then
two
I'm against
points,
it.
Guys, and then I have to go, unfortunately, because I take my wife to the airport.
Okay.
2 points. One, we're basically in agreement that our government is no longer serving the needs of the people. It is unrealistic to put our hope, and we've gotten trapped into this in believing that whoever we elect as president can change the systematic disaster that our government is. That is absurd. No one person can do that unless it's a Mussolini or a Hitler. And that's, you know, where you're going to wind up sooner or later. You cannot change a government that has totally failed the American people. It's not just the radicals of today. It's the whole damn system isn't working correctly. And somehow that we've got to recognize that and stop putting our faith in one person and asking them to fix all of our problems.
But here's, it doesn't work. Here's what Obama could do. And the president has the bulliest pulpit, as Theodore Roosevelt said, of any person on earth. I'm not saying he can achieve all these things by himself. He certainly can't. But he can call them out.
Yes.
He can make clear when the Republicans are doing all the things that Garland is complaining about, and you're complaining about, Terry. He can call them out, point the finger, and let the world see, let Americans see what's going on, because all of this stuff is done too secretly. I didn't know about this formulary. I'm embarrassed I didn't know about it. I do know about it now, and I'm going to talk about it now. But the point is that there's a heck of a lot of stuff going on secretly. I look at all the Koch brothers' money.
Yep.
And the Washington Post article, which pointed out, surprisingly to me, because I knew they spent a lot of money, but it still surprised me that those two brothers, Charles and David Koch, spent more money in our political system than every working American in every union combined. Republicans complain about, oh, unions give all this money to Democrats. You add up the United Auto Workers and AFL-CIO, teachers unions, you add up all the unions of America in one, and they gave less in the most recent political race in 2012 than these two men did.
And
that's secret stuff that needs to be called out.
To understand, and this is where we need a real president and a real leader, to understand that, in fact, the Koch brothers actually have more power politically in this country than the president of the United States.
That's scary.
And that's the reality.
Well, excuse me, because his power is limited anyway, he can't make legislation more than the people of the United States. Forget the president. You're fooling yourself if you think the president has all that much power. Yes,
exactly.
He can do some things and ceremonial things, but the president, you know, does not, I mean, you know, when you go to the Houses of Congress, when you look at the Supreme Court, like, and that's the other thing. Look at the dynamics under Obama. You have Citizens United, which changed the entire landscape.
Yep.
We are living in a new political environment, and we don't know over the next 10 years how it's going to turn out. It's so radically different.
And this is where we need an Eisenhower who speaks before he leaves office, doing exactly what Mark says we need, if anything, for Obama to have the guts, the courage. He's not going to obviously serve another term. He's got to stand up and to have like this financial bill passed that expires in September, 2 months before the election. It's so stupid,
yeah.
I can't even stand it.
Well,
he's got to stand up and say, look, you have got a medical, military, industrial complex here running the whole damn country, and he's got to make the noise. If he doesn't, then his presidency is going to mean very little.
He's got to expose them. That's what we have to do
yes.
at the Ruckus Caucus. That's what he has to do. He should fight them where he can, compromise where they're being reasonable, and where they're not, he's got to call them out.
And for the record, I actually do think that having studied him and read some of the greatest books about Obama, he is probably the most qualified person to be president we've ever had. But our system is not allowing it, and he has to stand up and say it.
Well, Terry, I understand you've got to go and leave us after this first half hour.
I can save all the solve all the other problems.
So we will solve all the problems in your absence. It might even be a little bit easier now that you're gone. We're gonna take a break, and Garland and I will be back to talk about West Virginia and, of course, solving all the world's problems. This is Mark Levine.
Thank you, Garland.
Thank you, Terry. We'll be right back with more of the Raucous Caucus right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine. I now have Garland Nixon alone with me. Hey, Garland.
Yes. Hey, Mark.
Terry's gone. We could talk about him behind his back.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Although he may be listening on the radio. Oh, no, he's in Oregon. Well, no, but he could listen on the web at marklevinetalk.com, and then he'd be listening. So we can't say too many things about him. I want to talk, though, and we can continue this discussion if you want, that Terry brought up, and also encourage people to call in, by the way, at 202-889-9797. I want to talk a little bit about West Virginia, Garland. Now, you and I have talked about this before,
yeah.
not on We Act Radio, but it's striking to me, frankly, how little attention it got when the capital and largest city of a state is without water. It's without drinking water. You can't bathe. You can't take a shower. You can't brush your teeth anywhere in the main population center of West Virginia. And it got, I think, relatively little attention. I'm sure it got attention in West Virginia. But here you have a chemical company, Freedom Industries, what an Orwellian name that is.
Freedom Industries.
Yeah, that had not had its chemical tanks checked in, 22 years. And a West Virginia government that basically didn't regulate it because they're bought and sold by people like the Koch brothers, people in the coal industry, people in the natural gas industry.
Yep.
And weak federal
regulations also.
And that's right. That's right. Because, you know, the Environmental Protection Agency is apparently the biggest danger to Republicans. So here it is. The last clean river in West Virginia, the Elk River, the only river that they had not yet basically bombed and destroyed, because that's what they're doing to get coal. They're literally bombing mountains, and the arsenic and selenium and other poisons just rain into the rivers, and then people can't drink from it. They left this one river alone. Now, the last clean river in West Virginia is gone, and people are like, ho-hum, I guess they should just move to another state.
Yeah. And I think one of the things that I personally have learned from this that has been a point that has been driven home to me and it's due to statements afterwards. You know, some people approached John Boehner and said, "Oh, don't you think there needs to be more regulations?" And his answer, of course, we already know. Absolutely not. Oh, there's no more regulations needed. I think what we have to come to grips with on the left is that we are dealing with a right wing. It has become a religion. And there are basic tenets of that religion. There are basic pillars of that religion. And one of the pillars is get rid of regulations, all regulations, no matter what, because they're bad for corporations, and corporations should be able to do whatever they want because they are inherently good. It is a religion. And we got to start facing that. We're not dealing with people who will negotiate things. They're not going to negotiate part of their religion. It doesn't matter if, you know, Love Canal Part 2 gets here, if the rivers are on fire, it doesn't matter what happens. They've got a religion, and that religion is not related to what happens in the real world. So the bottom line, if you ask a conservative, well, what does that show? They'll probably say something to the effect of, well, that just proves that we have too many regulations. Because everything proves that we have too many regulations.
Too many regulations because the storage container wasn't checked in 22 years and it leached chemicals into the Elk River?
Yeah, that proves it. If we had less regulations, the companies wouldn't be so busy going over sheets that have regulations on them, and they'd be more careful. I don't know. They'll say something crazy.
Yeah. I mean, it is.
You know, they were preoccupied. They were frightened. They didn't know what they were doing. They'll say something crazy that seems crazy to us. But as I said, it's obvious to me that this is part of their religion. This is part of what they pray to. And there's just no part, no room in there. There is nothing in the world of reality that will ever convince a conservative that we need any regulations.
So what do we do? I mean, these people in West Virginia, they are without water. They can't bathe. They're, frankly, not the most wealthy part of the country. They're not in the major media markets of the country. And this is an entire state, and it's a state that's bought lock, stock, and barrel by the coal interests. I mean, you would think, you would hope that the people in West Virginia would just vote them all out, I guess, in 2014.
Well, the other part is this, and there's the issue of class. The people in West Virginia are poor people. You know, it's a very, very, it's one of the poorest two or three states in the union. And because they're poor, now, if this happened in, you know, New York, if this happened in some city, well, it would have to be a blue state because let's face it, the red states are all, you know, pretty much poor. But let's just say it happened where people of wealth were, where media was. Then certainly it would get more attention. But as it is now, they're poor people. And sadly, the poor people don't even realize that they're being, well, that's a whole other story, don't even realize that they're being had.
So I guess my question is this. West Virginia is a very interesting state. It's a state that actually is still a Democratic state based on, I guess, its past when the South was solid Democratic. But it's a state that largely votes for the Republicans when it comes to national office. So what, I mean, do you think, let me give you an example, and this I guess goes back to Terry and President Obama. I would argue that President Obama, when 300,000 people don't have drinking water, I think he should have gone to West Virginia. I think he should have gone there and stood on the banks of the Elk River and say, this will not stand. Now, why wouldn't that make him a hero, not just to liberals across the country, but to the people of West Virginia who didn't vote for him? How about that?
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you. I think that's something that the Democratic Party does not do. I think the Republicans are always looking for some anomaly. You know, they'll find some anomaly. They'll root it out somewhere that appears to prove their point, where there's 99.999% of the things that happen that don't. They'll find one thing, you know, they'll find a little old lady somewhere who shot a burglar, and they'll say that proves that everybody should have guns all the time.
Right.
But the Democrats don't do that. And we have huge events like such as this that would prove our point that the EPA is important and that we need tighter environmental regulations. We just kind of walk around and pretend as though everybody's going to see it and everybody's going to agree, going to notice it and pay attention to it and agree with it. Well, that's just not the case. So we make big mistakes. We make huge mistakes when it comes to our public relations. Actions.
We have a caller calling in. It's Michael from the Bronx. Hey, Michael, how are you, sir?
Okay, it's a little bit of phone problems.
Well, I'm glad you could get in. We've been talking about, well, first of all, I don't know, did you hear the first half of the show? We talked about Terry talked about how he'd basically given up on President Obama, or at least given up on the hope that any president could change the system. And then now we've been talking about West Virginia and how it got such little media attention. Let me ask you this, Michael. My proposal is to sort of combine the two issues together. That President Obama go to the banks of the Elk River, stand there, maybe, in fact, while he flies there, Air Force One should be filled with bottled water, just like every inch. And he should fly into West Virginia and have troops unload bottled water there and stood on the banks of the Elk River and point at that Freedom Industries leaking tank and say, this should not happen in America. Congress should not allow this stuff to happen in America. Just the rhetoric of it. First of all, I think it's a great, as a politician, I think that's a great picture. Right? And people would remember that because people aren't even noticing West Virginia. If he were to do that, that would, I think, give more support for environmental legislation than we've had in 5 years. What do you think?
It is a great idea, but then you're forgetting one thing, Mark, of who is in Congress.
I know they're in Congress. I know they're the bad guys who control you. But my point is, when the president flies in with a bunch of bottled water and points at that and says, John Boehner, I have a bill, and my bill would allow the EPA to save that river. It's called the Clean Drinking Water Bill for West Virginia and other you know, whatever, just a clean drinking water bill. True. Why won't you sign on to that bill? When Boehner's going to have to answer. He's going to have to answer to the press. He's going to have to explain why he's against clean drinking water. And that's hard for even a Republican to defend.
But I can assure you, I mean, everything you're saying is correct, Mark. But I can assure you that Boehner, with the other conniving Republicans, like the Koch brothers, like the Rudy Giulianis, like everybody that has been against this president so much, the first thing they want to call for is impeachment.
Oh, I know.
But
that's just noise. Of course they're going to call for impeachment. They're going to claim he's a Kenyan socialist Muslim. They're going to say every name in the book. What I'm talking about is not winning them over. I'm talking about embarrassing them and winning over the middle of America, who frankly doesn't know who to trust. And when you've got a president of the United States out for clean drinking water, and you've got a Republican Party that's against clean drinking water, I think even the moderate conservative might recognize, maybe the Republicans have gone too far. Garland, what do you think?
Yeah, let me throw something in there, and here's what's important. I'm not going to delude myself into believing that the Republicans will do anything, bring anything up in the House, you know, regarding further environmental regulations. But what you're saying is so important, Marcus, for this reason. When you go into an election cycle, it is important to show a contrast. It's important to show that's who they are, this is who we are. So these are things that you can do to show the contrast, to demonstrate to American. So, you know, some things you say, some things, some people are visual, and you continue to find things like this, and you go there and you take photo, do the photo op, and you're seen, and you stand there and you speak up for what you believe in, and you show a difference so that when Americans get ready to vote, they will have a contrast. They won't, you won't hear that, oh, they're all just alike crap.
You know, in West Virginia, let's face it, they've got some Democratic senators, right? Where are they? I mean, I haven't heard them. I maybe they're in West Virginia talking to the people there, but I haven't seen them on Meet the Press. I haven't seen them loudly. I mean, I don't know. Is Meet the Press not inviting them? Why aren't they loudly saying we need help and the Republicans are preventing us from getting the clean water we need? Why aren't they saying that?
I can answer that.
All right. Go ahead, Michael.
Because for one thing, for Meet the Press, they were still fixated with the Bridgegate with Chris Christie and how that will affect him for the upcoming 20th.
Okay, but that was last week. I don't know what's on today.
That was this week.
Oh, was that on this morning? I didn't see it this morning.
Yeah.
That's last week's news as far as I'm concerned, but go ahead.
But it's one scandal after another that's piling up in New Jersey, and I think that is taking a lot of attention.
Well, we could talk about New Jersey and West Virginia, you know.
We should be able to.
I would think so.
Because it's a culture of abuse of power. It's a culture of corruption going on that's make it very detrimental to the 99% in this nation. And it's the top 1% that don't give a rat's rump. All they want to do is keep fattening their pockets no matter how many casualties they cause.
And that's why I like the West Virginia example, because it's a very clear one. It's a very clear one where the polluters make more money by not paying the money to protect the people's water. I mean, I don't know where you can get a more basic morality play than poisoning the water of an entire city. I mean, you know, when I think of the villains in James Bond or Superman or Batman, what's the villain always trying to do? They're trying to poison the entire city's water supply, right? I mean, that's what they're, and then Superman saves the day and stops the villain. This is such a clear, I mean, you don't need comic books here. This is very, very clear. And Obama, and listen, he's floundering on NSA. I actually disagree with him. I don't think he's being near tough enough. The National Security Agency. Here's his chance. I think his poll numbers would go up 10% if he would go stand with the people of West Virginia. And you know what the Republicans are going to say? This is a photo op. This is a wasted opportunity. All the president needed all this water. That's why I'd bring all this water in with him so that no one complains.
Yeah, and the other thing they'll say is whenever Barack Obama does something that's good and they can't really argue about it, they'll come up with some absurd motivation. The only reason he's doing it is because, you know, he's trying to change the everybody's attention away from Benghazi or the IRS scandal.
Right.
So they're going to attack him even if he goes down, if he hides in the basement and sleeps every day.
But here's the thing. When he worked with Chris Christie on Hurricane Sandy, you know, there were a few Republicans that complained. They did. They always do. But the vast majority of the country, including independents, all Democrats, and even some moderate Republicans said, well, you know, that's what a president and a governor have to do. They have to work together after a hurricane. To me, what happened in West Virginia, with due respect to the victims of Hurricane Sandy, is worse. Because hurricanes happen. They're not caused by anybody. But what happened in West Virginia is a crime. It's not a tragedy. It's a crime. It's a horror. It's much more like Hurricane Katrina, because Katrina, it wasn't the hurricane that was the problem. It's the way they dealt with the hurricane. And, of course, the levees broke and people were stranded and so forth. This is much more like Katrina than it is like Sandy. This is malfeasance. And this is exactly where Obama and the Democrats, not just him, the Democrats in Congress need to stand up and say, this is why you don't want Republican rule, because a whole city loses its drinking water. And let's get more reporters into West Virginia. Let's talk to people about what it's like not to bathe or brush your teeth for weeks on end, and there's no more bottled water in the city, and they all have to move out. You have basically a state evacuating itself. The entire southern part of West Virginia had to leave the state.
It goes further than that, gentlemen. It's what you also have to do is educate the number of Americans. I'm talking about registered Republicans who choose to stick with their party tooth and nail and cannot even wake up and smell the coffee and see that the people in their own party are causing great harm and perhaps life-threatening situations and diseases or illnesses to them. They won't wake up and smell the coffee that the people like John Boehner and the other Republicans in Congress are only for the freaking Koch brothers, only for the freaking people of Fox News that want to keep lying to their stinking faces. And I'm always the person that has always say, what is it, that people have to learn the hard way? You don't want to have to come to that point. It comes down to credibility as well. If these Republicans want to say, oh, Obama's there for the op, blah, 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 blah. We should have in capital letters, what the hell are you doing to better the situation?
Well, that's right. Push them to, because every time they attack Obamacare, it's not like they have any substitute or anything else for it. Thanks for your call, Michael. Appreciate always when you call in.
Can I touch base one more thing
real
before
quick.
I go?
Yeah.
In terms of the NSA and the spying thing. All right. You know, it was these same Republicans that are blasting Obama. They're the same ones that okayed it under Bush and kept harping about 9/11, this 9/11,
that.
We have to get after the terrorists. They're the ones that wanted this to begin with. And then we kept saying, no, because it's going to violate people's rights, and then before you know it, you're not going to like it if a Democrat is in there. Sure enough, we were right, they were wrong, and now they're saying that the whole thing is Obama's fault. Get the hell out of there with that nonsense, because you guys okayed it under Bush. Stop trying to blow smoke up our you-know-what, because we weren't born yesterday.
Good point, Michael.
Lying, we'll keep calling you out on it.
Fair enough. Thanks for your call. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and Mark, you know, something he brings up that I have to comment on, and that is the issue of right-wing hypocrisy. And people say they're inconsistent. Here's my position. The Republicans are, you can't be more consistent than they are. It's just that a lot of people don't understand their consistency. Here's what's consistent. If my guy is in, I support it.
Right.
If your guy is in, I'm against it.
Right. And
it's about hypocrisy. They could care less. You know, we focus on what? Well, my gosh, look at the issue. They flip-flop. They focus on who? Well, who's in office?
Right.
Who has power? Our guy. Then we support it. So while we get caught up on what it is and say, well, they're hypocritical and they're changing, they're not changing anything. The day Obama came in, the next day they said, my gosh, what about this deficit? They created the deficit. But the issue wasn't the deficit. The issue was, when our guy is in, we don't really care about this stuff.
Right.
When your guy is in, we do. Perfect consistency.
And I'm proud, actually, of our consistency. I've been very consistent. When Bush did the NSA spying, I called them out on radio as early as 2005, maybe even 2004. I'll have to check. I talked about hundreds of millions of Americans being spied on without a warrant. I consistently opposed it. That's made that very, very clear on radio. And there are some Democrats, let's face it, who act like the Republicans, who opposed it when Bush did it and now support it when Obama does it. I've been very consistent. I don't care who does it. As far as I'm concerned, you need a warrant. That's why we have the Fourth Amendment. That's why it's in the Constitution. You know, when it comes to spending, I've also been very clear. There's a time to spend, a time to save, and it's not based on who's president. It's based on the state of the economy. When the economy is roaring and unemployment is low, I agree. At that point, we should cut the deficit. We should run a surplus. I agree. Bill Clinton was absolutely right when he brought us the roaring economy of the late 1990s, that that's a great time to raise taxes on the rich, to cut back on the deficit, and he did a terrific job. He gave us the greatest surplus in modern times. But when you've got recession, when you've got still persistent high unemployment, the worst thing to do at that point is to cut unemployment insurance, is to take money out of the system, is to practice austerity. And that's not a question of Obama or Bush or Clinton. It's a question of where the economy is. When unemployment is low, spending should be low. When unemployment is high, spending should be high. That's just basic economics.
Yeah, but, and there's something else, a comment on the Republicans' position. People err. They don't understand. What are the Republicans very consistent with? No matter what, they want to cut, they want to smash the social safety net. They could care less about the deficit. That is a ruse. It's a lot. Well, how do I know that? When they got in, they blew the deficit through the ceiling.
Under
and when you say, there was a guy on Morning Joe the other day, so he's on there, the deficit, oh my God, the deficit. So Joe says, specifically, where do you want to cut? We got to do something about Social Security. Even if there is no deficit, they're going to name all of the social programs and say we need to get rid of them. If we're in a surplus, they're going to find a reason why they're not really interested in spending or the deficit. They're interested in cutting social programs,
right.
And that is a ruse that they can use to say we have to cut the deficit. Therefore, we got to cut. So when you say, well, what about the Pentagon? Well, we want to raise that. We need more. When you say, well, what about the things that you like? We need to spend more. Where do we need to cut? Well, where we always need to cut. We need to cut social programs because if you listen to them now, they believe that people who are poor because they're lazy and undisciplined.
That's true.
And if you give them anything with a social program, you are rewarding bad behavior,
they
will do even more of it. Because of their flawed premise, they believe the moral thing to do is to cut the safety net and get rid of social programs, and then these lazy, no-account people will go out and do something. And that is the entire foundation of it, and it has zero, zilch, nothing to do with actually spending.
And here's the thing. It's not like Democrats don't have ways to cut the deficit. We talked about raising taxes on multimillionaires. We talked about cutting the special benefits that hedge fund owners get. We talked about ending the special credit for corporate jets. We talked about making people who earn more than $100,000 pay the same Social Security taxes that people earn under $100,000 pay. There's all kinds of ways to cut the deficit without in any way harming the poor or middle class. And all you do is recognize that multimillionaires, frankly, don't spend much more, because when you have $200 million, your lifestyle doesn't change. But when you have $100 million, you already got all the yachts and golden toilet seats you need. You know, $100 to $200 million makes no difference. It's an entry in the bank book. But you take that same $100 million and you give $10,000 to 10,000 people who are middle class, and oh my God, they need the money. They need money to save for their kids for college. They need money for health care. They need money for rent. They need money for food. Maybe they want a second car. That goes directly into the economy, and that's the kind of thing that promotes growth. So I'm not even against all austerity. I think austerity towards the rich doesn't affect the economy at all. I think austerity towards the middle class and the working class absolutely harms the economy.
Right. And so where what happens is this. We get into a discussion as though they really were concerned about cutting spending or something.
Right.
We talk as though their premise were reality. When
right.
they say we need to cut spending, we discuss cutting spending. I think what we should say is this. When they say we need to cut spending, we say great, but we're not going to touch the social safety net. Okay? We're not touching the social safety net. That's out. We will not sign anything that touches the social safety net. The president will veto it. So that's out. Okay? So let's talk about where else we can cut spending.
Right. We can cut agricultural subsidies. We can cut agricultural subsidies. I'm fine with that.
But the Republicans will say no. We can't cut anything else. Well, what about agriculture? Oh, no, we can't do that. Well, how about subsidies to people? No, I can't cut that. They really, you just snatch away what they really want. You say, sure, we'll cut anything but the social safety net. They ain't going to be interested in cutting anything else because that's
all they're interested in is destroying the safety, social safety net. People, you know, you tell me, well, you know, Garland, I'm against alcohol. Liquor is terrible, and it's the devil's, you know, it's the devil's drink. And then I look, and you walk into a bar, and you drink five fifths of, you know, Jack Daniels. I'm not going to trust you anymore. So these people have demonstrated when they were in power that the Democrats could never dream of spending the kind of money that George Bush spent. And the day Obama came in, they said, "Oh my God, dude, you look at this deficit that we created." But Obama did it.
Yeah, the thing people really need to realize is that the largest deficit ever in the Obama presidency was the year that he split with George Bush. It was Bush's budget. It was the first $1 trillion budget started in 2008 under George W. Bush because of the massive recession that Bush caused, because of the lack of financial regulation, and because, first of all, you always spend more in a recession because we have these balancing mechanisms like unemployment insurance and Social Security and disability, which are good because they help dampen the swings that used to happen in the American economy. So part of it is natural, and part of it was even Bush agreed to a stimulus package. Nobody ever remembers this. Right before President Obama came into office, Bush actually had a stimulus package that everybody agreed on, Democrats and Republicans. Then when Obama does the exact same thing 4 months later, suddenly it's a horrible thing.
Yeah, and I mean, to even show that, one-third of the stimulus package that was passed under Obama was tax cuts.
That's right. And, it's not like Obama wanted that. That was a concession to the Republicans.
So when the Republicans say the stimulus package didn't create a single job, I say, so you're saying the tax cuts don't create jobs? So, you know, just a third of them was tax cuts, and you're saying it was an error, it didn't create a single job. So now you're admitting that tax cuts don't create jobs.
Yeah,
but the long and short of it is none of this. You know, we get so caught up talking with the Republicans as though their arguments are real and as though that's what they really, really think. So, you know, when you look at, you know, I heard Joe Scarborough one morning say, well, I think America understands that the Republicans can be trusted more with their money. Really? Ronald Reagan tripled the deficit.
That's right.
Barack Obama cut it nearly in half.
And in
now,
fact,
if you say that to a conservative, they'll say that's not true because it can't possibly be true to a conservative because their house of cards will all fall down if that's true, which it is.
All you have to do, and I actually have a friend that's done this, and maybe I can put it up on my internet site at marklevinetalk.com. He went through each of the presidents. It's actually a very simple thing to do. And what did he find? Right. He found in Obama, deficit went down. Bush Jr., deficit went up. Clinton, deficit went down so far we even had a surplus. Reagan and Bush, deficit went up. Ford, Nixon, the deficit went up. It did go up under Carter, but it went up more under the Republicans before and after them. Republicans are always, you can go all the way back to Roosevelt even. I mean, you go back to any post-war, go back to Truman, you will find that the Republicans spend more and have a higher deficit than the Democrats in any time in the post-war period. It's just a fact. How ironic that the Republicans are trying to grab this when every single Republican president has outspent and out-deficited, that's not a word, but it will be now, every Democratic president.
Well, and here's another thing important. I'll say this for our listeners to understand. The Republicans say just the opposite. They say something that's not true. And people always get freaked out because the Republicans will make a statement and someone else will prove that it's wrong and they'll make the same statement again and people will freak out and say, I can't believe it. They don't say these things because they're true. You know, as on the left, you got people like you and I, Mark, tend to, when we talk to accurately convey our thoughts.
Right.
And we think that everyone else is doing it. When the conservatives talk, they talk, that words are a means to an end. And if I want people to believe something, I'll say whatever I need to say. It doesn't matter if it's true. And then if you prove that it's not true, I'm going to keep saying it because I didn't say it because it was true in the first place. Who was the guy, you probably know, Mark, when he said that 90% of the money to Planned Parenthood goes to abortion. And they proved that wasn't true. They asked his office, and his office said, well, it wasn't meant to be factual.
Right, it wasn't meant to be factual.
That
was a Republican
true.
Senator, and I'm trying to remember which one it was.
Yeah, Imhoff, maybe, I don't know. But whatever the case, they said it wasn't meant to be factual. And people said, how could they say that? Because that's what they do. It was meant to convince people of something that they wanted people to believe.
Right, it was meant to make
they
people angry and fearful.
And
right, but it wasn't meant to be factual. And that's
right.
A great.
It was meant to convince people. It was meant to deceive. It was meant to mislead. It wasn't meant to be factual at all. And they do that constantly. And then we go out and we get so much glee in proving that they're wrong, as though they really care, as though they said it because it was right in the first place.
Well, Garland,
they just laugh and they just say it again.
Garland, let's end this show by always meaning to be factual. Liberals mean to be factual, and that's what we do on the Raucous Caucus. Even when we disagree with each other about methods or ways to fight the right, we always mean to be factual, and I think that's a commitment we can make. So thanks, Garland, for coming here on the Raucous Caucus. If people want to find you,
how do they
do that?
It's at Garland Nixon, and it's on Twitter, Garland Nixon on Facebook, and garlandn@gmail.com email.
Great. And you can find me at Mark Levine Talk on Twitter, MarkLevineTalk. Don't forget that second E. It distinguishes me.
Distinguishes
me from a real jerk on the right. At Mark Levine Talk on Twitter, Facebook.com/MarkLevineTalk, MarkLevineTalk.com. If you haven't figured out the theme by now, I think you have. Anyway, Colin, thanks for coming here on the air. Next up is the Inside Scoop. I'm co-hosting with Leslie Marshall, and we've got everything to talk about, everything from Chris Christie to West Virginia to prospects for 2016 to the NSA to what's going on in Afghanistan and Iraq. Great show coming up right after this.